Blog Talk Radio.
Swing it, Al.
Absolutely, babe. That was great stuff.
Al Hurt. And the theme from the Green Hornet. And this is James Boston with Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Radio, Patriot Nation Radio. Where the hell am I? Oh, it's Tuesday, so it's got to be live, theoretically. And this is the Patriot Nation Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio, putting the blah, blah, blah in Blog Talk. And Blog Talk, sweetheart, you've been doing okay the last couple of weeks. Last week it was a kind of a difficulty there and I got booted, but that wasn't Blog Talk's fault. That was mine, all mine. So I'll own that when they own the rest of them. And so far they haven't owned too many here in the last few months, and I'm very happy about that. What a day. Holy cats. Man, I am exhausted. Let's talk about dogs for a minute. You guys got dogs? I got it. Yeah, I love them. They're one of the worst things on earth. If you love dogs, it's having to say goodbye to one. We've all done it. Happens, you know, it happens if you have them. You go into that arrangement, of course, knowing you're going to outlive, the odds are, you're going to outlive. And I got a little Australian Shepherd. She's my best friend. And she's 13. And she's fairly healthy. I get her to the vet, make sure she's taken care of, feed her good food, love her, keep her, you know, well cared for. Well, she had this skin issue. It was a pretty simple thing. It happened over the summer. And so I took her to the vet and they said, well, you know, she got some thyroid problems. So we're going to give her a thyroid pill. So you have to take that from now on. And a couple other things. You know, there was an antifungal. There was an antibiotic. There was a steroid pack that we had to put her on. And, you know, she rolled right through it. Well, it came back. It came back with a vengeance. Over the holidays, and I've got a special shampoo that I use for her. Wasn't working. So
went to the vet today. And I have spent, I've spent the last couple days fundamentally, because it's just the way I am, really worried about her. So we go to the vet, and the whole, all day long, man, all day long. It's the weirdest thing. It just, it gets on me, and it's very difficult for me to shake at times, because maybe not so much with people, but when it comes to animals, I'm pretty tenderhearted. And I'm always programmed, and I don't know why. I try not to be, because anybody that knows me, you know, I work pretty hard for the most part on accentuating the positive. But not today, man. My mind was just racing with all these terrible things and the outcome. But everything's all right. Everything's all right. She'll be on the same kind of medicine again. It's a really, really severe yeast infection. We're not exactly sure how she got it. Could be the food. I'm looking to change that. The vet said that sometimes dogs, as they get older, they develop a sensitivity to chicken. I don't know why, but they do. And the particular food that I've had her on here for the last month or so has been a chicken and rice base. And I'm thinking that might have something to do with it. So tonight she got a half pound of hamburger because I love my dog. And it's just exhausting. It's just mentally exhausting on me today. But you know what? There's a bunch of crap going on, and we're going to get right down on it. The circular firing squad, as I said in the teaser, that is, the Democrat Party has reloaded and sends in the second team. But you know what? I got to thinking about that after I posted on this. The second team, there is no second team. They've shot everybody. when this thing ends, and it will, it's going to end soon. I just don't think there's going to be that many Democrats left standing. I really don't. It's going to bite them. Gary Binford, my good friend from up in New York, the visionary behind Nation Savers 2020. We were talking about this last Tuesday. He was on the program and we hung out. We got to spend a great hour and a half together, just basking in the afterglow that was Rock the Red. We had a great time down there. It was just terrific. And when we were down there, and I think we might have talked about it on the show on Tuesday. What I want to see is, I want to see a Godfather Day. You know what I mean? You're familiar with what I'm talking about in The Godfather. You know, in the first movie, they're having Don Vito Corleone's funeral. You know, and Michael and Fredo, you know, the family's there, Mama's there, Kay and the children are there, Tessio's there, everybody's there, and they're having the graveside service for Don Vito. And at the same time all this is happening, all the family's enemies were getting theirs. You know what I'm talking about? You remember them? Same thing, Godfather Part Two. They're there at son Michael's christening, young Michael's christening. And again, everybody's at the church. They're going through this ceremony. And again, all the family's enemies are brought to book. And that's what I want to see. And that's what Gary and I were talking about. You know, that's what I want to see. What I would love to see is maybe the president's giving a 4th of July address, because you know he knows, Donald Trump knows how to do 4th of July, because he's a great American and he loves this country and he understands the significance and the importance and the symbolism behind Independence Day. And that's what I would love. I would love to see him at the podium giving his speech, and at the same time he's giving his speech, U.S. Marshals and federal agents are knocking on doors and reading warrants and snapping on the bracelets. I want to see Nancy Pelosi wild-eyed, hair all over the place, still about halfway drunk, trying to fight with federal agents, talking about, do you know who I am?
and while they're taking, and they're all being marched off to a big bus with metal mesh on the windows. And these cats are taken away to be held until their cases are adjudicated. That's what I want. That's really what I want. No, I'm not going to see that. The realist in me says, ah, you beautiful dreamer, you. And it pains me to know that all these SOBs, you know, the odds are, and it's not through any fault of the president's, because I'm sure he would love to see these cats perp walked. Nobody would probably like to see these cats perp walked better than the president of the United States, especially after what these SOBs have put him through. And us, okay? It's not just the president. It is not just the president. It's you and I. Because we're the same, you see? We are the same. It's like, all, you know, you've seen the memes with a very somber black and white photo of Donald Trump, you know, close up on his face. They're not out to get me. They're out to get you. I'm just standing in their way. And he's absolutely right. We're the same. The contempt and the disdain and the disgust that these Democrat bastards have for the president, they have for us. They hate you just like they hate him. They hate me just the same, because in their eyes, there's no different. There's no difference between us. None. Listen to what he's got to say.
This is a movement like we've never seen in the history of our country. And that's what this fight is all about. We're taking on the failed political establishment and restoring government of, by, and for the people. It's the people. You're the people. You won the election.
We love this country. We love Donald Trump.
Promises made, promises kept.
We support President Trump.
This is epic.
Donald Trump is our president!
With every last ounce of heart and hope and sweat and soul, we are going to make our stand. We are going to stand for liberty. We are going to stand for justice. We are going to stand for freedom. And we are going to stand for the sacred rights given to us by the hand of Almighty God. You joined our movement, the greatest movement in the history of our country. You protected your family. You defended your dignity. You recaptured your destiny. And you took back your country with that great election 2.5 years ago.
Hell yeah, we did.
We are one united movement, one united people, and one United States of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
You have always been loyal to this nation. Now you finally have a president who is loyal to you. Every day between now and November 2020, we are going to keep on working, we are going to keep on fighting, and we are going to keep on winning, winning, winning. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America strong again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great.
Now, here in just an hour or two, in New Jersey, the president's going to be holding another one of his rallies. People have been camping out for 2 days to get into this thing. I'm telling you, I play this clip a lot, and you need to, I can't remember where it is. You can find just YouTube it, 4 more years, and it'll pull it up.
The guy's like Elvis, man. People can't get enough of him. He can't. They love him. I really truly believe this. He loves us. He loves the people of America. He loves this country. I really do believe that. And they can say whatever they want to about him. Oh, he did this. He did that. He's running around. He's dated. He's racist. He's a womanizer. He's everything. Okay. All right. Sure. He's a bad guy. A bad, bad guy. Simon Peter was a profane man of epic proportions. Moses killed a man. David, Rahab. Not good people. Not good people. But look what they were called upon by God to do. And look what they got done. The thing, the one tagline in this whole thing, this whole 4 more years deal. You have been loyal to your presidents, and finally, you have a president that's loyal to you. And I believe that. And that's, I think, what just absolutely chaps the O-ring of every single Democrat, every never-Trumper, every person of any political stripe that has some axe to grind against this guy. And there are many. Hell, they started talking about impeaching this dude when he was talking about running. We finally have a president who is loyal to us. That's a big deal, people. That's a big deal. Yeah, and there's a lot of guys. And like I said, they hate Donald Trump. They hate you. Your friends, your pals on the other side who hate Donald Trump, they don't like you that much anymore. They may not say it ever, but I can guarantee you that's the way it is, because that's how it is on the left. They see you and me, they see you and I as evil because we're conservative, because we're on the right. They see us as evil. They can't stand us, and they will never be able to get along with us because they hate us and see us as evil. Whereas we'll be able to get along with them because we just see them as mistaken. A huge difference between the two. It is not an easy thing to do. Or at least it isn't for me. So I can understand why people would be reluctant. 63 million people voted for Donald Trump. 63 million people said when they looked at Barack Obama and what he had done in the last 8 years, and they looked at Hillary Clinton, and they looked at Bernie Sanders, which is not an easy thing to do because Bernie is not a very handsome man. But that doesn't matter. He's a socialist, and he just wants your money. I hate you, Bernie. And these 63 million people looked at what these cats were doing and what their further intentions were, and they said, No. All you guys suck. The president we had here before Donald Trump, he sucked. The candidates that you're trying to screw us over with now, they suck. So, no. 63 million Americans put a stop to this bullshit. You know what? While I'm thinking about it, y'all need to pray for me because I've been cussing a lot here lately. Have y'all noticed that? I don't mean to. And by nature, I usually try to work really, really clean because that's just my way. I'm gonna try and cut back on that. Damn it. So 63 million people said enough already. And you can bet those 63 million people, after having been put through what we've been put through indirectly because of the nonstop attacks on the president, they're going to say enough already again. And this time, by God, they're going to mean it. And here's the thing. Just imagine. And it isn't an easy thing to do. because we live in this climate now where conservatives, Donald Trump supporters, and the people who, you know, believe in center-right policies and that type of ideology for the country, you know, we're reluctant to say anything because we don't really call any attention to ourselves. You know, people get beat up over this crap. Some guy got murdered by an employee this last weekend, killed him with a machete in a political conversation. Guy killed his boss because his boss was a Trump guy. That's the insanity of the left. And I promise you, I cannot count the times that I have seen that communist SOB, John Brennan. By the way, did you know that in 1976, John Brennan voted for the Communist Party USA's presidential candidate, Slobber and Gus Hall? Did you know that? Well, he did. And I don't know how the hell you I don't know how you couldn't know it. I say it every time I mention that guy's name. That's the dude right there for me out of this deck of cards, this deck of evildoer cards. He is the one guy. I don't even want to say anything. I just want to walk up and I just want to clock him. Just right, just pow, zoom to the moon, Brennan. Just right in the kisser, kapow, and use those big Batman sound effects, you know, whap. I'm serious. And I tell you, Adam Schiff has come into second place, holding a strong third, fourth, and fifth, of course, Gerald Nadler. I hate these guys, man. I'm sorry, I hate them. I see them as enemies of the country. I see them as traitors. I see them as usurpers. I see them as villains. I see them as what they really are. And I'm serious. For 2 cents, I would gladly rock that old man's head right off his shoulders. You, Johnny Brennan. You, Johnny Red. He's the worst. God, I hate that guy. Where was I? But just imagine, if you will, there were 63 million people. Taking a couple of their buddies aside. Not their Republican buddies. Okay, maybe some of their Democrat fishing buddies. Braving the silliness and trying to make an outreach to them. Maybe you know an issue they're particularly passionate about. Approach it from that way. And the truth of the matter is, the Democrats love division. They love division. That's part of that. That's their jam, man. Divide and conquer. Look at all those splintered groups you have in the Democrat Party. You got the LBGs. No, wait a minute. That's being back. Okay. Yeah, you got the LBGs. You got the LBGTs. You got the LTDs. You got the Occupy Wall Street types. You've got the Black Lives Matter types. You've got those women wearing the vaginal helmet out there. You know, you've got all these different groups. And the Democrats will tell these cats whatever they think these guys want to hear as long as they got their votes. The same guy who looks into the jaundiced eyes of the LGBTQ groups and tells them what they want to hear is the same guy who's going to look into the jaundiced eyes of the Black Lives Matter people or the vaginal helmet wearing people and tell them exactly the same thing. The only problem is there comes a point of intersectionality where these groups are going to say, hey, you told me this, and you told me this, and you told me this. But you can't tell us all that, and you can't give everybody what they want. So who's it going to be? And these groups are going to start tearing themselves apart, and they're going to start fighting for whatever largesse they imagine these lying Democrat politicians have thrown their way. So just think about it. $63 million Americans talk to three people each. Excuse me. Excuse me. That's 180 Americans, 180 million Americans, 180 million plus. Think about that. I'll tell you something else I think too. And I've watched this guy from the get-go. I've watched his campaign. I wasn't exactly an early Trump train rider, but he was saying things right off the bat that resonated with me. And they've been beaten up on that. I have noticed this. They have not had, nobody said, these guys haven't had anything good to say about him since the time he decided, since he came down the golden escalator with Homer Simpson right behind him to announce his candidacy. These people have been after him every single day. Rocks, arrows, slings. It never ends. They've called him everything but a child of God. They hate his guts. They hate us. And do you know what I think? I think the guy thrives on it. I'm serious. I've never seen a guy, and this includes Ronald Reagan, in my lifetime, a political leader, and he's not really a politician, but a man in the public arena, in the political arena, who gives back better than he gets more than this guy. Never. Ronald Reagan was a class act, and he had his way about him. And George W. Bush, I don't think, hit back at all, and shame on him. He should have smacked down on these guys a lot more than he did, but he was trying to be the nice dude. And that's been one of the problems with Republicans. They love taking that high road and enduring those slings and arrows of outrageous Democrats, when what they need to do is what Donald Trump's done. He pulls the arrow out of his chest and rams it in the other guy's eye. And that, by God's, what you've got to do. Wow, I didn't realize I was going to preach like this tonight. Yesterday, Pam Bondi, prosecuting attorney from out of Florida, she's on the president's defense team, his legal counsel, laid it out. It's a long clip. It's 30 minutes, I know, and I'm really sorry about that, but you know what? It's you know my philosophy. And what she has done is she has laid out the case, as we have many times before here, with the help of Pete Schweitzer and Secret Empires, and most recently his new book, which I just popped up on Kindle automatically last Monday because I pre-ordered it, Profiles in Corruption. It's not just Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, okay? There's a crime family here. But Pam Bondi yesterday laid it out. I don't think anybody's ever done it any better. And we're going to listen to it here again. Like I said, it's kind of a lengthy clip, and I apologize for that. But it's worth every word. If you didn't watch the impeachment hearings, and most people don't because it's a snooze. Yesterday was good. Up until yesterday, it was pretty much a snooze fest. The 2 hours that they had on Saturday where they fundamentally shredded the previous 24 hours of hot dog, narfin, pencil neck, bug eye, and crap that was blah, 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 saying, you know, orange man bad over and over and over and over again. They shredded it in 2 hours, which was good enough for me. But today, or yesterday rather, was a much better day in terms of hey, all right, we're taking it back to him for a change. Pam Bondi did an excellent job. People are now starting to talk about Joe and Hunter Biden. And if it's made it this far into the impeachment hearing, witnesses are going to be coming up soon. And pretty soon that means that Adam Schiff is going to be answering some questions too. That's going to be interesting. Because I'm guarantee you they're going to want to talk to Adam Schiff. This is from yesterday, Pam Bondi at the Senate impeachment trial of the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
When the House managers gave you their presentation, when they submitted their brief, they repeatedly referenced Hunter Biden and Burisma. They spoke to you for over 21 hours, and they referenced Biden or Burisma over 400 times. And when they gave these presentations, they said there was nothing to see. It was a sham. This is fiction. In their trial memorandum, the House managers described this as baseless. Now, why did they say that? Why did they invoke Biden or Burisma over 400 times? The reason they needed to do that is because they are here saying that the president must be impeached and removed from office for raising a concern. And that's why we have to talk about this today. They say sham, they say baseless, because they say this because if it's okay for someone to say, hey, you know what? Maybe there's something here worth raising, then their case crumbles. Because they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that there is no basis to raise this concern. But that's not what public records show. Here are just a few of the public sources that flagged questions surrounding this very same issue. The United Kingdom Serious Fraud Office, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent, Hunter Biden's former business associate, an ABC White House reporter, Good Morning America, ABC, The Washington Post, The New York Times, Ukrainian law enforcement, and the Obama State Department itself. They all raised this issue. We would prefer not to be talking about this. We would prefer not to be discussing this. But the House managers have placed this squarely at issue, so we must address it. Let's look at the facts. In early 2014, Joe Biden, our Vice President of the United States, led the United States foreign policy in Ukraine with the goal of rooting out corruption. According to an annual study published by Transparency International, during this time, Ukraine was one of the most corrupt countries in the entire world. In Ukraine, there's a natural gas company called Burisma. Burisma has been owned by an oligarch named Mykola Solchevsky. Here's what happened very shortly after Vice President Biden was made U.S. point man for Ukraine. His son, Hunter Biden, ends up on the board of Burisma, working for and paid by the oligarch Solchevsky. In February 2014, in the wake of anti-corruption uprising by the people of Ukraine, Zelchevsky flees the country, flees Ukraine. Zelchevsky, the oligarch, is well known. George Kent, the very first witness that the Democrats called during their public hearings, testified Zelchevsky stood out for his self-dealings even among other oligarchs. House managers didn't tell you that. Ambassador Kurt Volker explained that Burisma had a, quote, very bad reputation as a company for corruption and money laundering, end quote. House managers didn't tell you that. Burisma was so corrupt that George Kent said he intervened to prevent USAID from co-sponsoring an event with Burisma. You know what this event was? It was a child contest, and the prize was a camera. They were so bad, Burisma, that our country wouldn't even co-sponsor a children's event with Burisma. In March 2014, the United Kingdom Serious Fraud Office opens a money laundering investigation into the oligarch, Solchevsky, and his company, Burisma. The very next month, April 2014, according to a public report, Hunter Biden quietly joins the board of Burisma. Remember, early 2014 was when Vice President Biden began leading Ukraine policy. Here's how Hunter Biden came to join Burisma's board in April 2014. He was brought on the board by Devin Archer, his business partner. Devin Archer was college roommates with Chris Hines, stepson of Secretary of State John Kerry. All three men, Hunter Biden, Devin Archer, and Chris Hines, had all started an investment firm together. Public records show that April 16, 2014, Devin Archer meets with Vice President Biden at the White House. Just 2 days later, on April 18, 2014, is when Hunter Biden quietly joins Burisma, according to public reporting. Remember, this is just 1 month after the United Kingdom's Serious Fraud Office opened a money laundering case into Burisma. Hunter Biden joins their board. And not only 10 days after Hunter Biden joins the board, British authorities seize $23 million in British bank accounts connected to the oligarch Zelchevsky, the owner of Burisma. Did Hunter Biden leave the board then? No. The British authorities also announced that it had started a criminal investigation into potential money laundering. Did Hunter Biden leave the board? No. What happened was then, only then, did the company choose to announce that Hunter Biden had joined the board after the assets of Burisma and his oligarch owner, Zelchevsky, were frozen and a criminal investigation had begun. Hunter Biden's decision to join Burisma raised flags almost immediately. One article from May 2014 stated, "The appointment of Joe Biden's son to the board of Ukrainian gas firm Burisma has raised eyebrows the world over." Even an outlet with bias for Democrats pointed out Hunter Biden's activities created a conflict of interest for Joe Biden. The article stated, "The move raises questions about a potential conflict of interest for Joe Biden." Now, even Chris Hines, Hunter Biden's own business partner, had grave concerns. He thought that working with Burisma was unacceptable, says Chris Hines. He was worried about the corruption, the geopolitical risk, and how bad it would look. So he wisely distances himself from Hunter Biden and Devin Archer's appointments to Burisma. He didn't simply call his stepfather, Secretary of State, and say, "I have a problem with this." He didn't tell his friends, "Hey guys, I'm not getting on the board. I want nothing to do with this." He went so far as to send an email to senior State Department officials about this issue. This is Chris Hines. He wrote, "Apparently, Devin and Hunter have joined the board of Burisma, and a press release went out today. I can't speak to why they decided to, but there is no investment by our firm in their company." What did Hunter Biden do? He stayed on the board. What did Chris Hines do? He subsequently stopped doing business with his college roommate, Devin Archer, and his friend, Hunter Biden. Chris Hines' spokesperson said, "The lack of judgment in this matter was a major catalyst for Mr. Hines ending his business relationship with Mr. Archer and Mr. Biden." Now, the media also noticed. The same day, an ABC News reporter asked Obama White House Press Secretary Jay Carney about it. Here's what happened.
Hunter Biden has now taken a position with the largest oil and gas company, holding company in Ukraine. Is there any concern about at least the appearance of a conflict there? to the vice president.
I would refer you to the vice president's office. I saw those reports. You know, Hunter Biden and other members of the Biden family are obviously private citizens, and where they work is not does not reflect an endorsement by the administration or by the vice president or president, but I would refer you to the vice president's office.
The next day, the Washington Post ran a story about it. It said, the appointment of the vice president's son to a Ukrainian oil board looks nepotistic at best, nefarious at worst. Again, the appointment of the vice president's son to a Ukrainian oil board looks nepotistic at best, nefarious at worst. And the media didn't stop questioning, asking questions here. It kept going. Here's ABC.
You have to fight the cancer of corruption.
But then something strange happened. Just 3 weeks later, a Ukrainian natural gas company, Burisma, accused of corruption, appoints Hunter Biden, seen here in their promotional videos, to their board of directors, paying his firm more than $1 million a year.
Here's more from ABC. Continued on.
And Ukraine wasn't the only country where Hunter Biden's business and his father's diplomacy as vice president intersected. It also happened in China.
This video shows Chinese diplomats greeting Vice President Biden as he arrived in Beijing in December of 2013. Right by his side, his son Hunter. Less than 2 weeks later, Hunter's firm had new business, creating an investment fund in China involving the government-controlled Bank of China, with reports they hope to raise $1.5 billion.
In fact, every witness who was asked about Hunter Biden's involvement with Burisma agreed there was a potential appearance of a conflict of interest. Multiple House Democrat witnesses, including those from the Department of State, the National Security Council, and others, unanimously testified there was a potential appearance of a conflict of interest. These were their witnesses. How much money did Hunter Biden get for being on the board? Well, you start looking at his bank records. According to reports, between April 2014 and October 2015, Burisma paid more than $3.1 million to Devin Archer and Hunter Biden. That's over the course of a year and a half. How do we know this? Some of Devin Archer's bank records were disclosed during an unrelated federal criminal case having nothing to do with Hunter Biden. These bank records show 17 months that Burisma wired two payments of $83,333, not just for 1 month, for 2 months, for 3 months, but for 17 months. According to Reuters, sources report that of the two payments of $83,333 each, one was for Hunter Biden and one Devin Archer. Now, Hunter Biden was paid significantly more than board members for major U.S. Fortune 100 companies, such as Goldman Sachs, Comcast, Citigroup. The typical board member of these Fortune 100 companies, we know they're titans of their industry, they're highly qualified, and as such, they're well compensated. Even so, Hunter Biden was paid significantly more. This is how well he was compensated. So Hunter Biden is paid over $83,000 a month, while the average American family of four during that time, each year, made less than $54,000. And that's according to U.S. Census Bureau during that time. And this is what's been reported about his work on the board. The Washington Post said, quote, what specific duties Hunter Biden carried out for Burisma are not fully known, end quote. The New Yorker reported, quote, once or twice a year, he attended Burisma board meetings and energy forums that took place in Europe, End quote. When speaking with ABC News about his qualifications to be on Burisma's board, Hunter Biden didn't point to any of the usual qualifications of a board member. Hunter Biden had no experience in natural gas, no experience in the energy sector, no experience with Ukrainian regulatory affairs. As far as we know, he doesn't speak Ukrainian. So naturally, the media has asked questions about his board membership.
He went out
with
the Ukrainian stripper
on this
one
board?
Time, though.
If your last name wasn't Biden, do you think you would have been asked to be on the board of Burisma?
Hell no.
I don't know. Probably not.
You don't know?
So let's go back and talk about his time on the board.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Remember, he joined Burisma's board April 2014 while the United Kingdom had an open money laundering case against Burisma and its owner, the oligarch Zelchevsky. On August 20th, 2014, 4 months later, the Ukrainian Prosecutor General's office initiates a money laundering investigation into the same oligarch, Zelchevsky. This is one of 15 investigations into Burisma and Zelchevsky, according to a recent public statement made by the current Prosecutor General. On January 16, 2015, prosecutors put Zelchevsky, the owner of Burisma, on whose Hunter Biden sat on his board, on the country's wanted list for fraud, while Hunter Biden's on the board. Then a British court orders Zelchevsky's $23 million in assets be unfrozen. Why was the money unfrozen? Deputy Assistant Secretary Kent testified to it.
Somebody in the General Prosecutor's Office of Ukraine shut the case, issued a letter to his lawyer, and that money went poof.
Essentially paid a bribe to make the case go away.
That is our strong assumption, yes, sir.
I said, look, you're not getting $1 billion.
He also testified that the Ukrainian Prosecutor General's office's actions led to the unfreezing of the assets. After George Kent's confirmation, that prosecutor was out. Viktor Shokin becomes the prosecutor general. This is the prosecutor that you'll hear about later, the one that Vice President Biden has publicly said he wanted out of office. In addition to flagging questions about previous prosecutors' actions, George Kent also specifically voiced other concerns, this time to the Vice President's office about Hunter Biden. In February 2015, he raised concerns about Hunter Biden to Vice President Biden's office.
In a briefing call with the National Security Staff of the Office of the Vice President in February of 2015, I raised my concern that Hunter Biden's status as a board member would create the perception of a conflict of interest.
But House managers didn't tell you that. This is all while Hunter Biden sat on Burisma's board.
Okay, we're not going to go any further into the weeds on this. You get the idea. $83,000 a month for 12 months is $1 million. Times two. But it doesn't stop there. And in the coming weeks, we're probably not going to get into it this evening because we're going to move on to some other things. I got some other clips I want to share with you that aren't quite that long. The Democrats would, you know, just like she said, the House managers, they didn't mention these things because they don't want you to know about them. These guys, look, these guys were not hiring Hunter Biden. They weren't. They were hiring Joe Biden. It's clear. He said the Hunter Biden, God, U.S. Yeah, smoking U.S. Navy reject, stripper baby daddy, deadbeat dad. Didn't know. I don't know. They might not have hired me if I hadn't been Biden. Really? You must have been smoking crack. Would you just put the pipe down before they turned the cameras on? God. But it's not there. It also has to do with China. Just like she said, they started up, there's a startup company, Bohai Harvest. And that was in, you know, that was in conjunction with Rosemont Seneca. There is a machining company. There's a machine tool company in the United States called Heniges, H-E-N-N-I-G-E-S, Heniges. And there are certain technical applications, machine applications that they've developed in terms of, I guess I could say shock absorbing systems or anti-vibrational systems, but it's really a little bit more sophisticated than that because it has certain military transport applications. Well, as soon as Bohai Harvest got set up, and again, Bohai Harvest was staked to their money through the Bank of China. So what does this mean? This means that we have the son of a sitting vice president who is business partners with the People's Republic of China. Chi-coms, Chinese communists. So they buy Heniges, which means that they also have access to this anti-vibrational technology, this shock dampening, this vibration dampening technology, which means that they're probably applying it to their military applications now. They're using it for their military applications as we speak. Probably reverse engineering the stuff and building it with slave labor somewhere in China with people who don't have the flu. Which, by the way, isn't that odd? The Lunar New Year, which is like a reverse Mecca for the Chinese. They go out all over the place. And this coronavirus is going with them. What if it was weaponized? What if they were in the process of weaponizing it and somebody made a whoopsie and it got loose? Or worse, what if it didn't get loose? What if it was released? At the last count, China had close to a bazillion people. If they lose a million or two, so what? They don't care. It doesn't matter. A million people. They got a million people underneath the couch cushions in Xi Jinping's living room. They found a million people trapped in the dryer lint vent. It's nothing. I mean, that's kind of far-fetched. I know, but. It wouldn't surprise me. Gee whiz, nothing surprises me much these days. Tell you what we're going to do. Ran a little bit long, but that's okay. We got 2 hours, kid. Take a little bit of a musical break, and we will be back with more of Conservative's perspective. Lutsenko, good Lord, Yuri Lutsenko. You don't know who that is, but I do. It's the guy who replaced Viktor Shokin as prosecutor. Shokin was the guy that Biden had fired, and then Lutsenko came in and took over. Whew. Okay, anyway, we will be back with more of ACP after this brief musical interlude. Back after this. Better on night.
take a little trip to Z.
Little copy of Lalo Guerrero's Marijuana Boogie there by sure sounds like Cheech Marin, but I don't think that's who it is. And we're back. Conservative perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio. Putting the blah, blah, blah on Blog Talk. These cats are a crime family. I don't know what else you want to call it. I don't know how else you could say it. But it transcends Ukraine and China. And we're going to get into it, not tonight, but soon, as to all the stuff this guy's done. And not just, you know, he's got brothers, Frank and James, and there's another brother. I can't think of his name. But it's all the same thing. These guys get involved in businesses that they have totally no background in, none. Joe Biden's been doing this since 1972 when he first came to office. And as he has gone through his political career, he has worked assiduously to do what he can to throw money towards the family. Because he speaks in his memoir, Biden speaks in his memoir, he says, you know, I learned from my dad early on the importance of family. That's the most important thing there is. And you do everything you can for your family. You protect. You do what you can to protect it. You do what you can to provide for it. And you know, he's taken it to this sick level. And As I said, we'll go into it. I've been reading the book. I've read the chapter on Joe Biden twice now, and I'm still having a hard time getting my head wrapped around all this stuff. It's huge. Is it as big as the Clintons? Well, with the exception of all the dead bodies, it's pretty big. It's pretty big. Profiles in Corruption, Pete Schweitzer. You need to get this book, folks. If you got a Kindle, you can pick it up for $11 or $12. Maybe 14. I paid 14 for it. Get it. Check it out. You will be astonished. Straight up astonished. Never seen anything like it. It's unbelievable. Tomorrow, let me see. Unless they did it today, they might have done it today because I haven't checked on it. I've been busy. It's been a long day. And as soon as I got home, I had to take the baby girl over to the vet and get her squared away. And as soon as I got done with that, I was back here trying to get things put together for the show. They probably, in all likelihood, because it was not expected that the House would, or the Republican defense group would take up the entire 24 hours, both sides allotted 24 hours to present their cases. They used 2 hours on Saturday. The president's defense team used 2 hours on Saturday. And really, if you heard those 2 hours, you're good. You got it. Because in those 2 hours, they shredded everything that Jerry the Jowl and the Schiffer Brains had to say. And they did a very effective job at it. The lawyers that the president has, top of the line. I mean, these are the very best that, you know, the fleet's got to offer. Let's see. I got a couple other things that I wanted to play. Also, the timing, remarkably suspect, or remarkably carefully timed. John Bolton, former ambassador to UN, I think Secretary of Defense there for the president, you know, he was fired. And the timing and the purpose and the narrative engineering here are transparent in the extreme. The New York Times wrote an article. When was this? What is today? Anybody know? 28th? Something like that. Anyway, I think it was yesterday. Wrote an article claiming that they had gained exclusively portions of a transcript of a John Bolton book manuscript that was given to the White House National Security Council for pre-publication review. Now, how the hell does the New York Times get copies of this transcript? See, you know what they do. You know, Bolton's got a book, so he's gonna before he can publish his book, National Security Council has to look it over, see if there's anything in there that he ought not be saying or. In deference to national security. So one of the Hydra operatives in the NSC leaked it to the New York Times. Now, of course, at the time, they attempt to frame this narrative around the need for John Bolton to testify in the Senate impeachment trial, which I know you guys have heard. We want Bolton. We got to have him. Now you don't need Bolton. He doesn't know anything. Well, whoops. Hey, we got a book over here. All right. So, which is all too transparent in its motive, you know. So it's timed that the release of this book and more importantly, the leaking of what they want us to infer is in the book was timed to work around this House fraud, this impeachment article construction without judicial review for the subpoenas. What does that mean? Well, that means they didn't take the vote to the full House on impeachment. You cannot authorize impeachment or delve into that area without a vote of the full House. Every Democrat, every Republican, not just the select committees, not just the committee chairmen, not just the Democrats on these committees, the full House. You understand? Well, of course you do. That's a rhetorical question. So fundamentally, the details on the book are a nothing burger, okay? But what we see in this leak because
sitting in the captain's chair, I know things. A little more than a week ago, here's what happened. This is the backstory on this. National Security Council Senior Director for European and Russian Affairs, some dickweed named Andrew Peake, get this, was escorted from White House grounds and is said to be under security-related investigations. January 17th, Gary, me and you was rolling down to Rock the Red by that time, buddy. National Security Senior Director for European and Russian Affairs, Andrew Peake, and he looks kind of like a dickweed, one of those guys that has the blue shirt with the white collar. I hate that. Oh, my God, I hate that. Anyway, there's a picture of him here. So he's under a security investigation. You know, there's not a lot out there. There's few details, actually precious few details, about why he was physically removed and is under a very serious investigation. However, some of Andrew Peake's professional background details tell a story. The connection to General John Allen is a massive warning flare. Andrew Peake, been placed on administrative leave, blah, blah, blah. And people familiar with the situation tell Axios and the Daily Mail first. Peake had been in the NSC role for just 2 months after most recently working as a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State with responsibilities concerning Iran and Iraq. He had been expected to attend the World Economic Forum in Davos last week with Trump, but he got walked out of the building. He served as a U.S. Army intelligence officer who worked under John Allen in Afghanistan. Prior to joining the Trump administration, he was also a national security advisor to Senator Gordon Smith, an Oregon Republican, and Senator Mike Johanns, a Nebraska Republican. Here's how it looks. Peake was a mole. He was a Hydra operative, they say resistance spy. Okay, again, this is just one of my own unique reference points to me. Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Go watch it. Yeah, it's a superhero movie, blah, 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 whatever. Go watch it. To look at the way Hydra operated. Hydra was in every facet of American government. And that's what's going on here. This guy, Peake, is no exception. He was a Hydra agent. He was a mole. He was put in the Trump administration as part of the Hydra deep state resistance effort. Someone caught him trying to access something, and here's how we can tell. And the page is in trouble. The biggest flair in this was the fact that he worked with former John Allen and supposedly Sundance or Treehouse. They might have an interview because he was
About that unpublished transcript, the president said it's not true. The attorney general has come out today and said specifically, it's not true. This is why you do fulsome investigations over in the House before you dump this on the doorstep of the United States Senate. They didn't do that. The Senate can't fix this. This was a process that was broken and corrupted all the way along. The president was deprived of due process all the way along. This thing fails in every respect. And again, no single witness is going to change that.
Let's now go to Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan. So, Mr. Jordan, you've been temporarily assigned to the House Intelligence Committee for the impeachment inquiry hearings. I'm sure that your colleagues were glad to have you there last week. Could I ask you your opinion about whether President Trump should testify in any way, even if that included just answering some questions, pen?
Yeah, that's totally up. Good to be with you, Dan. That's totally up to the White House, totally up to the president. Whether he does it or not, I don't anticipate him testifying in an open hearing. I certainly don't anticipate that. But if he wants to provide answers, that's completely his call, and the legal counsel at the White House says that's their call.
What do you make of the upcoming testimony from Gordon Sondland? He's the ambassador to the EU.
Yeah.
He's already changed his testimony once. Amended it based on, he said his memory was refreshed. He had read some other testimony, and he said he needed to do that before he came. How do you think he will hold up as a witness on Wednesday?
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see. What we know is what he said in his deposition, and that really did not change in the addendum he provided to his deposition testimony. He said there was no quid pro quo and that Zelensky should do the right thing. And the right thing, of course, is deal with the huge corruption problem that has been just part of Ukraine for the longest time. I think it was Ernst & Young who said they're one of the three most corrupt countries on the planet. So the president was very clear, and Mr. Sondland was very clear when he gave his testimony to the committee in the deposition, and his addendum fundamentally change that. So the bottom line is four facts will never change, Dan. I don't care how many witnesses they bring in. They can have eight hearings this week, the two big hearings with our three witnesses last week. The facts have never changed. We've got the transcript. There was no linkage of an investigation to security assistance money. We got the two guys on the call, President Trump and President Zelensky,
themselves.
Who have both said there was no pressure, no pushing. We have the fact that Ukraine didn't know that the aid was held at the time of the call. And most importantly, President Zelensky didn't announce, didn't start, didn't promise he was going to start any investigation to get the aid released.
And yet the Republicans being totally united, and I think that will, I don't see that changing through the course of this week. But do you have any concerns about anybody in the Senate maybe going wobbly on the Republicans?
We're focused on the House side right now. I don't really. I think the senators see this for just like the American people do. The facts are on the president's side, and the process is completely unfair. I mean, think about this fact. Adam Schiff gets to call witnesses whenever he wants. We had to give our list a week ago Saturday. Adam Schiff, he doesn't even release all the transcripts, and by not releasing the transcripts, we can't use that
testimony
in these hearings.
Do you think that they are holding those transcripts up for a reason? Like, do you know that maybe there's a reason that they don't want them out, or is it because it's just taking them a long time to get them done?
No, it's all tactical. It's all strategic from their point of view. There's a reason they scheduled the witnesses in the order they've scheduled them.
Yeah.
There's a reason that they have the witnesses that we actually wanted called, even though they're Adam Schiff's witnesses. He deposed them. He called them for a deposition. They're all in the afternoon. There's a reason he doesn't release all the transcripts until certain witnesses have already testified, because we actually follow the rules. They selectively leak from these depositions. So I think it's all planned. I think it's all choreographed and part of their unfair process to go after this president.
So the Republicans, as I said,
quite
unified out there with united message. And yet the tide of public opinion, I want to show you the ABC news poll that just came out this morning. 51% of Americans say that President Trump's actions were wrong and he should be impeached by the House and removed from office. 19% say the President Trump's actions were wrong, but he should not be removed, and 25% say that he did nothing wrong. And then there were, I think, 70% that say that they think that the call was wrong or inappropriate. Is there anything that the Republicans can do this week to try to turn the tide of public opinion?
Well, the first thing I would say is I don't think they've been talking to many people in Ohio, because I go back to our state and I know what it's like in the 4th District. I know what it's like across our state, and the folks in Ohio appreciate what the president has accomplished in the 3 years he's been commander in chief. They like lower taxes, less regulation.
Yeah.
They like the economy growing and all the great things that have happened. So I don't see that back home. That's for sure. What we're going to do is focus on getting the truth out. And it's not as easy for our side. Remember, these are all Adam Schiff's witnesses, all the depositions that he did in the secret hearing, all the selective leaks they had. He can call witnesses when he wants. He even stopped us from asking questions.
Yeah, and
when we asked Colonel Vindman who he talked to after the July 25th call, a guy subpoenaed by Congress to answer congressional questions, and only Adam Schiff got to ask the questions he wanted. We didn't get to ask our questions. He prevented the witness from answering. So that's the kind of format
we've been functioning in. Let me just ask you one last thing. After last Wednesday's testimony, that was with George Kent and Bill Taylor, the next morning, and I read a lot of coverage from all across the board, and I would say that Democrats seemed very subdued, that they thought that they actually have a harder job right now, that they don't think that they'll be able to actually hit the bar that they have raised so high. And I'll give you the last word.
And they can't.
Yeah, of course they can't, because their star witness was Bill Taylor, who never met the president, never met Giuliani, never met Mick Mulvaney, and had no firsthand knowledge of anything. And the four facts that I talked about earlier have never changed, will never change. So it is a tough case for them. But they get to keep telling their story with the witnesses they want to bring in.
Yeah,
I hear you. Making it a little difficult on us. But we're going to win, because the American people know the facts are on the president's side, and they know this whole thing is unfair.
All right, well, we'll be watching all week long, and I will work on my posture this week, since it was those are long hours. Congressman Jim Jordan, thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
Okay, that was Maria Bartiromo there on Fox Business News. She's awesome. And nobody is probably better informed on what goes on here with Spygate and with this whole thing than Maria. Let's go ahead. Here is the clip. A little bit long. That's okay. It's about 7 minutes. Jim Jordan shredding this whole thing with John Bolton. Nah, I'm not going to give it any more setup than that. Here's Representative Jim Jordan.
About that unpublished transcript, the president said it's not true. The attorney general has come out today and said specifically, it's not true. This is why you do fulsome investigations over in the House before you dump this on the doorstep of the United States Senate. They didn't do that. The Senate can't fix this. This was a process that was broken and corrupted all the way along. The president was deprived of due process all the way along. This thing fails in every respect. And again, no single witness is going to change that.
You've been taking on the process. On substance, though, are you saying you don't believe John Bolton?
Actually, we haven't heard from John Bolton.
But do you want to? You could.
They haven't denied the authenticity of the manuscript.
So here's the thing.
John Bolton could have a press conference. He doesn't have to testify.
You know, at this particular point, what we've heard is about a manuscript, and I can tell you, we've seen this before, the whistleblower. All of you remember the whistleblower complaint? A number of false allegations in the whistleblower complaint that have been totally rebuked and debunked by a real testimony. And when we start to hear this, to suggest that any more witnesses are going to provide clarity, there are no witnesses that can provide any more clarity other than the President of the United States, President Zelensky, the Vice President of the United States, and the Foreign Minister of Ukraine. All four of them say that there was no pressure, there was no conditionality, there were no deliverables, and so to suggest that anybody else has any facts that will change those underlying facts is just not credible.
But Congressman, sir, why wouldn't he be relevant, sir? Congressman, some of your colleagues in the Senate on the Republican side say he would be a relevant witness. Why not?
Well, let me tell you about the process in the House side. We went
this is Elise Stefanik right here.
Depositions with leaks taken out of context, with
Mark Meadows, John Ratcliffe, and Jim Jordan all on
as
this.
As the depositions have been released, this is nothing new. This is part of the Democrats' playbook. And Adam Schiff had an opportunity. He subpoenaed John Bolton and then withdrew that subpoena. If this testimony was so important, it should have been part of the House process. Adam Schiff chose not to get all the facts. And the most important facts remain the same, in that Ukraine received the aid and there was no conditionality because there was no investigations into the Biden. Regardless of any of the other news stories, those facts remain the same.
So Bolton's account turns out to be true. Are you okay with it as presented in the report? Are you okay with the allegations that he has laid out then?
The question that stands before our senators today is the case that the Democrats are bringing forward. Does any of the evidence rise to impeachable offenses? And the answer to that is no. Not a single witness who has testified has said that there is any direct evidence of impeachable offenses, high crimes, misdemeanor, bribery, or treason.
But some of your Republican colleagues seem to think that this is changing the Republican calculus, that there is increasing pressure. Do you believe, are you resigned to the fact that there may now be witnesses?
I would just say someone telling the New York Times what John Bolton's draft manuscript supposedly says doesn't change the underlying facts, doesn't change those four key facts we've been talking about all along. And just because they bring it up at the last minute, they tried the same darn thing in the House. Remember, Ambassador Taylor had talked to David Holmes about his conversation that he overheard between Mr. Sondland and the President of the United States. But Ambassador Taylor was their star witness. He never brought it up. But suddenly David Holmes is brought in the last week with, oh, I overheard this conversation at a restaurant in Kyiv, and suddenly that's supposed to be... That doesn't change the underlying facts. Just like someone telling the New York Times that they think the draft manuscript of John Bolton's book says something, that doesn't change anything. So let's get on with this. The American people want us to get on with this and get it over with so we can get back to the work for them.
This could really extend the timeline, Congressman. This could really extend the timeline, sir.
And the investigations weren't linked. Bolton is saying they were linked. Why wouldn't you want to hear the New York Times?
Does it... No. Someone told the New York Times. As I think Mr. Ratcliffe and Ms. Stefanik pointed out, Adam Schiff should have done that on the House side, for goodness sake.
Which brings up an important point. Everyone needs to just take a deep breath and remember one thing. In our constitutional system, the Senate has one important job first. This is what the defense team is going to present today and explain very clearly. They have to first answer a threshold question before you get to witnesses and documents and all this other stuff. The Senate has to determine whether the articles that were sent over by the House are valid and legitimate on their face. Are these valid articles of impeachment? Abuse of power and obstruction of Congress do not meet the constitutional threshold, and the Senate has to answer that question objectively the right way. When they do, if and when they do, all of the rest of this is a moot point. The House did not do its job. Adam Schiff did not call the witnesses that apparently he thinks he now needed. And it's too late. No. The House sent over invalid articles, and the Senate, I think, will find that, and it will dispense with a lot of these superfluous questions.
Can the President then tie this security assistance to pressure Ukraine to investigate Biden? That's okay.
He did not, because the aid was released to Ukraine, and there was no investigation.
But
the President has said that he did not tie. There was no conditionality. Gordon Sondland, in fact, testified, and we saw that played out as the President's defense team made the case, that it was presumption, assumption, and guesswork. So the facts of this case remain the same in that we have more security assistance for Ukraine, much more than during the Obama administration, and there was, in fact, no investigation into the Biden.
But
and the administration, this was Adam Schiff's choice. Adam Schiff is clearly scared that his case is so weak. Adam Schiff made the decision to withdraw the subpoena. This is an unfair, unconstitutional, and half-baked set of impeachment articles that was sent over to
the Senate.
He's wearing Schiff pants. It's been very interesting to hear this. And you talk about relevance. Let's go back to something here. One, it's interesting to hear the question say, well, if John Bolton said it, it must be true. Even though the President said it didn't happen, Barr said it didn't happen, we don't take that. And the interesting issue here is these were all known by Adam Schiff when he started that he had his witness. You talk about relevancy. I have a question for you. Why wouldn't Adam Schiff be relevant as a witness when him and his staff met with the whistleblower before it became public? They wanted the whistleblower out there, but when it became public that he meddled or his staff had actually had contact, then it's a relevancy issue. But here's what they didn't do it. What they wanted to do was on a clock and a calendar in the House. And you can make all the arguments now that you think they should be done in the Senate right now. But go back, because I've heard a lot of you talk about Clinton and I've heard you talk about Nixon. In Clinton, there was almost 3 years of a Starr report in which everything was aired in grand jury, which the White House was all involved in. There was nothing there except when the Starr report was then issued to the House then had their hearings, and they went forward from there. In this case, we've had 78 days, as Mr. Ratcliffe pointed out, 71 of which were never even involved with the President. But it's interesting to me today that now to say that these are relevant witnesses, where was the call for relevant witnesses when Adam Schiff was holding his underground hearings and not going forward? So, again, the premise of your question is that Bolton undoubtedly must be right. The President and Ali must be wrong. We've proved that wrong over and over again, and the President seems going to do that again today.
Well, except for Senate Republicans who say they're relevant, sir. It's not.
And there we go. House Republicans speaking to reporters as we are getting ready.
Okay, that's enough out of you, dude. I'll handle the tail end of this thing. Thank you very much. And this is the thing, guys. He doesn't have to testify. John Bolton could have had a press conference any time he wanted and said whatever he wanted. It's that simple. And again, if he was that big, if he was figured to have been that big a deal, if he were that big a catch in terms of witnesses, why didn't Adam Schiff have him come in? Why didn't Adam Schiff have him come in? Tough to say. Questions we will answer. You know what? Here's the thing. Guys, we're scheduled for 2 hours tonight, but I just don't think I can do it. The back is numbing up on me. I've been in this chair for a while now. It's been a long day. Been kind of an anxious day, worried about my little baby girl, but she's going to be fine. She's going to be fine, and I do feel good about that. So I guess, I think we're just going to go ahead and put the brakes on it right here. Now, I'm really excited about Thursday's show. On Thursday's show, we got a guy named Kevin White. He's an author of a book that's recently been put out, and I'm not going to get into it now with you, but he's going to be on the show Thursday. Terrific dude. Looking forward to talking with him, and starting tomorrow when we promote the show, we'll go into more detail about it. Thank you guys for the opportunity to hang out with you. A lot of clips tonight. We were clip heavy, and I'm very, very sorry about that, but it's better you hear it from them than some half-assed paraphrasing by me. You can disseminate the information far more effectively when you hear the principals themselves, when you hear them speaking, when you hear their words coming out of their big fat mouths. And that's kind of what we did tonight. Hey, it's been great, even though it's been kind of a tough day and I'm a little on the sore side. It's been great to be here with you this evening, and I'm looking forward to Thursday. We got some great guests lined up. Claire Lopez, Vice President for Analysis at the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C. there. She was another one of the featured speakers. Excuse me. She was another one of the – it's like my voice is changing or something. She was another one of the featured speakers at Rock the Red. We're looking forward to having her on in the not-too-distant future. K. Carl Smith, probably the most dynamic of those speakers there, talking about the concept of Frederick Douglass Republicanism. You might have heard Gary and I touch on that last Tuesday when we came back from Rock the Red. He's in the mix. And John Guandolo, this is the one I'm really, really excited about. John Guandolo, Naval Academy guy, Marine Corps guy, CIA guy. He's the dude that broke the story on John. By the way, did you know that in 1976, John Brennan, former head of the CIA, voted for the Communist Party USA's presidential candidate, Slobber and Gus Hall? By God, he did. And apparently sometime when he was stationed in Riyadh, before he became director of the CIA, he converted to Islam. John Brennan. We're going to talk. Hopefully we can get John. His guy, though, is a pretty serious vetter. So I hope that I've got the bona fides and they'll say, yeah, we can go on and talk to this dude because he wants to hear what you guys say. And that's what I want to focus on with. We've got Michael Cutler, of course. I've got some outreach made with him. Another terrific dude that I met. And we're going to be seeing these guys coming up in the coming weeks. Thank you so much for the opportunity to hang with you cats this evening. We've been doing this for a while, 6 years, actually. And I think when I was creating the show today, between Mark and myself for the Patriot Nation Radio Network, we've got over 700 shows. And it's been a great partnership. And we're just crazy about that old El Guapo. But we're done for this evening. I'm going to go ahead and cut it off early. Thank you guys for hanging out with me and putting up with me. We'll be back on Thursday. Live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here, Blog Talk Radio on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, and we will be taking a look at things as we do, through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.